I'm David Schreiner Khan, and this is Smashing the Plateau. No matter how successful you are, there's probably at least one area where roadblocks are keeping you from fully achieving your goals. Fortunately, you've come to the right place. Every expert I interview on this podcast is different, but they all have one thing in common. They know how to fix problems that keep people stuck. Today, I'm pleased to welcome Ira Miller. Ira has dedicated himself to helping business leaders become consistently more effective in their leadership roles. He has a wealth of experience. He has spent time understanding what creates proven leadership philosophies, what methods, processes work with business owners, CEOs, and senior executives. For almost 30 years, Ira was successful at reviving underperforming organizations, including two divisions at GE, divisions of other publicly traded companies, and venture-backed businesses. Ira has held the positions of division president, chief operating officer, chief financial officer, and senior vice president of marketing and sales. He has a broad industry base that includes traditional and high-technology manufacturing, service, and financial services businesses. Ira, welcome to the show. It's great to have you on.
David, it's a pleasure to be with you.
So you have lots and lots of experience both inside companies and outside as a consultant and advisor. And clearly, you know a lot about leadership. I know that that's your core expertise. And I wondered if we could start off by talking about the responsibilities of leadership. What are they?
Well, David, when I first left industry and got started in this practice, I was calling a lot of people to talk to them to get their feedback. And there's a lot of time on my hands, as you might imagine, as I was waiting for people to call back. So I'm pacing around the house. And my wife finally got fed up with that. As you know, she told me she married me for better or worse, not for lunch. So I she says, why don't you go into the office and write down everything you know about leadership? And it turned out that that was the start of a about 3 to 4 week odyssey of doing exactly that. And what I concluded was that my belief is that leadership is a job. And if it's a job, it can be defined. And so what I searched for were, what are the things that are unique to leadership? And so it doesn't matter what the job is, what the title is, but if you're a leader, you have these things. And I came up with the 5 undelegatable responsibilities of leadership. And they are, just to list them.
Yes, please.
To understand the enterprise objective, and that is, what do the owners of the business want to accomplish with it? From that, to identify strategic priorities. These are the 3 to 5 things that are standing in the way of achieving the enterprise objective. There's another item. The third item is called organizational structure. And that is, what structure is needed in order to jump the hurdles of the strategic priorities. The fourth area is called infrastructure. This is a really big box. This is where all the risk-reward decisions are made, policies are put together. So it's all the things that are going to basically establish the ballpark that the business is going to play in. And the final one is called communication. And it comes in the 5th spot, but it really overlays the other 4. And I've used that construct now for 15 years as a consultant. And by keeping my clients in that path, it turns out that it crystallizes a lot of issues for them, and they are able to get to their goals by knowing which box they're in and whether they have accomplished the previous boxes objectives. It just keeps them focused.
Yeah, I've never seen leadership described quite this way, and it's a really interesting construct, and I can see how this can be very valuable for both for consultants and for the consultants' clients who are senior leaders.
Right. Yeah, it's designed for the senior leaders as a model for them to help them understand where they are and what they need to do next.
So when senior leaders are presented with this construct for the first time, what are some of the outcomes that you've seen?
It takes, interestingly enough, it takes about 3 months for this to become comfortable for them. So the benefit is, or the beauty of what I do, is that I work with people who are already successful. And so they have a success formula. They've gotten to this level of success by behaving in a certain way. And what we're really doing here is presenting them with tools. So it's just like any other tool. You have to learn how to use it. And through the coaching process, the mentoring process, they get very comfortable with it. So there's never been any pushback. It's sort of intuitively obvious when you lay it out in front of them with all the detail. There's never been any pushback. I'm trying to think. I've never had anyone reject it, so it's been accepted. And the net result is that about 6 months into the mentoring assignments, the supervisor, and you got to be careful with what that means. It could be a board of directors, it could be the CEO, but the supervisor of the mentee starts seeing a change in the way they are approaching, the way the mentee is approaching business and making decisions, and for the better.
Now, does it make any difference whether the mentee is the senior staff person in the organization or second level?
No. No, the leadership model turns out that it's working from the director level up. And I don't have clients below the director level. So every level that I'm working at, it has been helpful.
That's really interesting. So, Ira, you've had a lot of experience both inside companies and also a long track record as a consultant. I wondered if we could spend some time talking, particularly aiming this conversation at people who are in advisory roles, working with entrepreneurs or people who are in leadership roles in larger organizations. What I know you've come up with this construct, but also B, like anybody else who's in an advisory capacity, you've had your own successes and challenges, and I wondered if you could share a little bit of your own experiences and what you have found works well when you have a particular framework that you're trying to use, and you also need to be able to develop relationships with people who are going to become your clients and are your clients, and what it means to be able to develop that and nurture it and work with it over time.
Wow. Okay. How long is this interview? Let me start at the
beginning. Let's see how it goes.
let me start at the beginning. I came out of industry, and what I wanted to do is what I'm doing now, which is mentoring senior executives. I spoke to five or six CEOs to actually travel to their location. They gave me the time to sit down. I presented what I wanted to do, and I got a resounding, that will never work, out of all of them. And it was because I wanted to come in and basically share what I thought would be beneficial. And what they forced back on me was, you know, implied in what you're saying is that we're not successful now. And that was very interesting. And so I wrestled with that for about 6 months, got a job or two, but clearly was not satisfied with where the business was going. I attended an industry association, the Institute of Management Consultants, national meeting. This would have been around May of 2001. And in the very first day after the general session, I came in late for lunch. There was one chair left. And we're talking about hundreds of people. So there's sort of a chair at this one large table. And I sat down And I was listening to the consultants around the table talking. And these are very experienced people, probably averaging, I'd say, 20, 25 years experience at this table. And they were just complaining about how stupid their clients were. And basically, it boiled down to the fact that the clients were hiring them. These were senior executives. These folks came in. They did their job. They left a recommendation with them. And then that didn't get implemented. And I was very interested in this because 6 months earlier, I was one of these stupid executives. So I was very interested in what they were saying. So I asked a whole bunch of questions. And what hit me was that while these people were extremely bright and extremely well-versed in their field, in essence, they were narrow but very deep, what they didn't understand was the journey that the CEO, let's just call it the CEO slot, that the CEO had traveled. They didn't understand what the CEO went through before he or she picked up the phone to call them, nor did they understand what they left behind. In other words, what was the job of the CEO to get this thing implemented at the end? So what that did is it said to me that, you know, I really understand that journey. And if I can align myself with the journey, then that's a sustainable strategic advantage. I don't need to be narrow and deep. I need to be sort of shallow and broad. And so what that has done is it's really created a formula for me to work with, to get in front of and work with these senior executives. So I'll share that with you, and you can shut me down and if I'm going down the wrong path here. For me to be involved, I need to ride in on somebody else's, creativity. That's not right. Ride in on somebody else's credibility. Okay, right. So I'm going to be introduced, right? Somebody's going to introduce me. And based on that introduction, I'm going to be allowed to have a meeting. Most of my meetings happen to be by phone, but could easily be in person. And that first meeting, so here, this is basically the formula. The first meeting, I'll ask a very open-ended question, like, why are we talking? And I've got to get the other person talking about what their issues are. Sometimes they're going to be surface issues, and sometimes they may be very deep. But they're going to talk about an issue. And what I want to do at the end of that conversation is I want to ask a very penetrating question. I share with other consultants that if your client's thinking vertically, you want to be thinking horizontally. You just want to come at them a different way. And what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to move myself from the client's vision of me as a vendor to someone who is more their peer. And I would say of all the things you can do to generate a relationship with senior level people, it is to become their peer, to have, to be able to tell, you know, a difficult story, tell truth to power, and to do it in a way that they understand that you're on their side. Is that getting close to what you were looking for?
Yeah, it's it's interesting that you describe yourself as being shallow and broad. And if you're telling me that you're aligning yourself with the CEO's journey, to me that actually sounds like it is narrow, but it's focused on the journey as opposed to being focused on a subject area.
Right. That's exactly right. And what I found, it was actually in that same industry conference, is that there was a wide range of people who have product that you can learn to use. A lot of it you have to become certified in, but you can learn to use it. And the product itself creates the depth that you need for leadership. Okay, so if somebody is doing what I think of as technical consulting, putting in a computer system, something like that, they have to be deep. That's their job to be deep. So, and I make a distinction between that type of consulting and what I think of as being a consultant to management, where you're really working with them on their issues, and those issues are going to move around. If you're with them long enough, they're going to move around because they're going to go from customer concerns to product concerns to people concerns to personal concerns. It's just going to bounce around over time.
Yeah, it certainly does. Do you find that it makes any difference whether the CEO is a CEO of a big organization or a small one?
Absolutely not. The issues they're going to encounter will be exactly the same. So one of the challenges when you become a peer, one of the challenges is to live their life at their level. So a leader of a relatively small company, let's say $10 million division, okay, a leader of a smaller division like that has less resources. And so you have to help them more with conclusions, if you will. Help them not go down blind alleys so that it's a little, it's more productive for them. The larger companies, it's much more wanting to give them concepts and letting them run it through that success formula and helping them take the steps necessary to move towards their goals, move towards that enterprise objective. But they have the resources to do the research. They have the ability to try a lot of things and fail. So it's not as, they can try more stuff. That was one of the things Jack Welch said about GE. Why GE is successful, he says, we get more at-bats. So the bigger companies get more at-bats. The little companies need to protect against failure. So you just have to deal with that. But as far as what the issues are, they're all exactly the same.
Now, do you find that it's interesting that you talk about implementation being so difficult and what happens when the typical consultant leaves? With regard to implementation, in my business, we actually focus on implementation for that very fact. Because, like you, I was inside organizations for a long time before I became a consultant and started my business. And I found that whenever we hired consultants, the biggest challenge was dealing with the advice that the consultants gave us after the consultants left. Because 9 times out of 10, we didn't do anything.
Right.
And right. Everybody got frustrated, and we spent a lot of money and time.
Yeah, the statistic that I heard is that 86% of consulting engagements fail. And that's, you know, you sit there and think about that. And by the way, I've used that statistic with my clients, and I have never gotten any pushback. They just sort of, you go silent on the other end of the phone, and you can hear, you can almost envision them thinking about their assignments, and they'll come back and go, that's about right.
Yeah, I would say that my experience when I was inside organizations was very similar, probably somewhere around that number.
Yeah, so by going through the journey, just I'll wrap this up, but by going through the journey, the we go all the way into implementation. And so we're working with the leader and keeping the leader focused. Let me say it another way. We're helping the leader stay focused on whatever they've decided to do. In the work I do a huge amount of forced prioritization with the leader so that at the end of the day, we know what's coming out is, it, you know, it's not a hobby. This is important to do. The challenge is how do you stay focused on the important when the urgent is knocking on the door. And we do that. We have some techniques to help the leader continue down those five undelegatable responsibilities, and that helps keep them focused on achieving the goals. And so with our, I think I've had one or two failures in the 15 years. So we're doing pretty good.
That's remarkable. And yes, balancing the urgent versus the important is the biggest challenge, because yep. left to sort of the natural course, the urgent will always win.
Exactly.
Right. And even though everybody knows that the important is more important than the urgent, it's still hard to maintain focus and maintain action on what's important.
I'll give you one technique that I've had a few clients use. I wish I could tell you I developed this, but I didn't. It was the CEO at a company that I worked at did this. And what I asked them to do is put the strategic priorities on a small card and laminate it and give it out to everybody. So we have the enterprise objective, we have the strategic priorities, and I asked the leader to walk around with those, keep that card with them at all the time. And when they're in meetings and they're trying to figure out what to do or where to apply their time, I ask them, take the card out and ask the people in the room if what they're doing or what they're asking for resources to accomplish is going to achieve any of those strategic priorities. If they can identify that, then you know you have something that you should be talking about. If not, you're dealing with something that might be good to do, but it isn't important, because the important stuff addresses these strategic priorities.
And it seems to me that that is a way more valuable exercise than spending the time and money to create a long strategic plan or a business plan.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of strategy. I'm a big fan of operating plans. You have to have something to go on. What I'm dead set against is, you know, volumes and volumes of books on the shelf that call themselves the 2016 strategic plan, when in effect nobody will ever look at them, and they're going to just go back and do whatever urgent asks them to do.
But if you give them an index card, they're more likely to look at it.
Absolutely. And it's easy to carry around. Just carry it in your shirt pocket.
It's brilliant. Ira, who have been some of your influencers? I know, you, as I said, you have a long career and you've done some fascinating work. Who have been some of your influencers that have helped you along the way?
Well, it depends how far back you want to go. If we deal with the business influencers, there are really two very important people in my business life. One is Jack Kirker, and the other is Rick Richardson. Both were at General Electric. Jack Kirker was the CFO of a division I joined when I came off the financial management program at GE. And he was a phenomenal example of great leadership. Interesting fellow who graduated high school, went to fight in the Korean War, came home with a Korean wife, and with nothing more than a high school education, went to work in the factory, got tapped to go into the office. He had to take a cut in pay to do that. He then got tapped to join the financial management program at GE and eventually worked his way up to CFO. So I was working for a fellow without a college degree, probably the best emotional intelligence individual I've ever seen. And he just, he did one thing for me. Well, he did two things for me that were critical. One is he fought for me to have my first senior executive job at GE. I was asked to be CFO of a division that in today's dollars would probably be about $1.4 billion in sales, and I was 29. And he fought real hard to get me in that job. And then after the first year, going into my second appraisal, he called me in and he said, Ira, I can do this appraisal two ways. I can measure you against the job you're on now, in which case you'll get very high grades. Or I can measure you against what it takes to be doing the job at the next level, in essence, his job. And I jumped at that. And so that was the second thing he did for me that I thought was very, very important.
And brilliant. Brilliant.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's the guy. I mean, that's the way he was. Rick Richardson came in to that same business after we had gone through some ridiculous number of division, actually it'd be group presidents. And he came in and, we got to meet him. You have to, just a little bit about just physical size. I'm 5'6". I probably weighed at that time maybe 150 pounds. Rick Richardson could have been a tackle for a football team. So you get the idea of the difference in how imposing we might be physically.
Yes.
Okay. So after being there about a week or two, I get a call to come to Jack's office, and I do. Frankly, their offices were right across the hall. So I wander across the hall, and there's Jack and Rick. And Rick's holding a letter. And he turns the letter around to me, and he says, "Did you write this?" Well, my name and signature are on the top of the letter. Yes, Rick, I wrote that letter. And it had to do with responding fairly strongly to one of his direct reports who had brought up some financial issue that was bogus. And he looked at me and said, "I like you." He goes, he was really happy with the response. And from that point forward, and for a lot of reasons that we probably shouldn't talk about, he had me in his staff meetings. So we're talking about two organizational layers. And I'm sitting in his weekly staff meetings. The general manager of my business left after a year. I ran the business for that next year while Rick was out searching for a permanent and much more qualified person than I would have been. He had me on task forces that had absolutely nothing to do with my job. And he just constantly stretched me. We would have, because of this physical proximity, it was easy for him to know whether I had gone home and for me to know whether he had gone home. And we would sit and talk. I was doing, he asked me to do develop sections of presentations for his presentations upward. The amount that I learned, I worked for Rick under Rick for 6 years. The amount that I learned in those 6 years and the items I learned have stayed with me and have been the foundation of anything I've done from there forward.
It's remarkable how individuals like that, whether they're mentors or supervisors or teachers, are so instrumental to our behavior and our success for many, many years to come.
And one of the things that taught me, and I probably don't do a good enough job bringing this forward to my clients, is that another responsibility of leadership is to do that. Is mentoring, to make sure that they choose people who they believe can succeed and help them get over, see what that is, see what that success is, and help them get to it. I really think that's critical.
Ira, shifting to the present, who do you know personally who is doing really remarkable work?
There are two people I'd like to share with you because they're very different situations. The first one is a lady named Jennifer Leek. And Jennifer has a company called Assessment Pros. She's a solopreneur. She is a little bit about her personally. She's one of these people who add energy and joy to a room. There aren't a lot of them, and we need to celebrate these people.
Yes, we do.
So Jennifer's wonderful to be around, and her business up until about, I want to say, a year and a half ago, her business was selling assessments. I used to call her the assessment queen. If you were a consultant and you wanted something assessed, you wanted to know, are the people we're interviewing likely to subscribe to our value system? You would call her and you would say, Jennifer, this is what I'm trying to do. She would do the research and she would basically package assessments for you to do that. And her business was about selling those assessments. You would buy them in 20, a package of 25. When you went through those 25 licenses, you'd buy another 25. That was her business. And she was very, very good at it. About a year and a half ago, she changed her model to saying, basically what she said to herself is, I can use assessments. I can still sell them to other people. But what I know how to do is I know how to use these assessments to help businesses better engage their employees. And that's what she's done. It's almost like a launch of a new business. And I want to say, boy, this is remarkable. It's remarkable in a lot of different ways. Number one, in order to make that switch, she had to change her business model substantially. So she took the risk to do that. Another thing that in my mind that's remarkable about it is that she encountered immediate success. And she did it at a pricing scale, without getting into the details, that is roughly three times what it was when she was just selling assessments. So she raised her profitability dramatically as a result of it. And the third reason is that in true entrepreneurial fashion, she understood how important engagement is in the workforce at this point. The most recent studies that I've read about, I don't read the studies themselves, but that have come out of an organization called the Herman Group, are saying that engagement, study after study after study, employees are saying engagement is the second or third most important thing in their job satisfaction. So that's Jennifer's story, and I just think she's doing a great job helping leaders out now with a critical issue, which is finding the right people. People are always the issue.
And, yep, they sure
and
are.
It is tough now.
It's very tough.
So she's doing that. The other person I would share with you is a fellow named Tom Thompson. And Tom runs a thing here in Southern Pines called the Awakened Heart Center. And I'm not sure this is technically correct, but I say that Tom is a Zen master. And Tom has helped me get through some difficult times. But the thing that he did that I really loved was I asked him to address our chapter of the Institute of Management Consultants to help us as solopreneurs think about ourselves. We're constantly working in our business. We don't work a lot on our business. We should work more there. And we work almost not at all on ourselves. So I asked him to come up and would he share something with the group? And he did. And the topic of his workshop was letting death be your advisor. And basically what it boils down to is envisioning where you want to be at the end of your life and how are you going to get there? It was popular, but it was tremendously effective with the people in the room. It really changed the way many of us viewed how we were going to live the rest of our lives. So I think that's remarkable work, although it's not in the business context.
Well, it isn't. It is, but it isn't, because unless you think about what you want to achieve in the amount of time you have left, you can't. It's going to make it hard to do your best, whether it's in your personal life or in your business life.
I agree completely, but I have to tell you, I was, to use the word, enlightened. I mean, it was really well done, and something that, at least for those of us in the room, we were not spending much time, if any, thinking about. We were just sort of
doing
one foot in front of the other.
That's pretty common.
Know? Yeah.
So, Ira, turning back to you for a minute. And your business, what are you working on now?
Well, I have two projects right now that are sort of bookends. It's very interesting. One is a family business in which we're getting the sons ready to take over for Dad, who's also the founder. And the interesting thing there is how wide-ranging the work is. It's one thing to help with profitability, to help with organization structure, reward systems, mentoring the two boys, providing business advice and counsel to the father, all of that. But it turns out that we needed to bring the wives into play here, not the owners and not the founder's wife, but the two wives of the boys. They weren't, let me put it another way, they needed to know what it was going to take from them in order for the boys to keep the business successful and to grow it. And it turns out they had some very erroneous ideas about what that was. And they were fearful, extremely fearful about what was going to happen. So we actually called a meeting. It was like two Thanksgivings ago. We called a meeting and at the founder's house, and we went through all of this, and that's been working very, very well. So that's one thing I'm working on, and it's just a lot of fun to see the growth go there. The other one is a $1.5, actually more than that, billion-dollar enterprise, and I'm advising the CEO and helping them run their strategic plans. And the challenge there so far has been that the previous CEO, who retired last December, had been in that job for 30 years. And is an icon in the industry. And now we've got the new CEO, who is from the inside, thank goodness, and has got, you know, many, many years of credibility built up inside the company. But the challenge is, how do you take this job and make it your own? How do you move from the old path to a new path, to a path that is going to represent your personality, your methodologies, and address probably the industry the way it's going to be, as opposed to the way the previous CEO had hoped it would be. I don't know if that makes sense to you, but the industry is in great change at this point. So that's been a very different type of conversation, more conversation with the CEO about how he communicates, how he establishes the culture in the organization that he wants to see. that'll address the a realistic future for the business.
And they're both about creating a successful succession.
Yes, although I wasn't involved in, for the large company, I wasn't involved in developing the succession plan. That was,
But you're dealing with, in both cases, you're dealing with the successors and their behavior.
Yes.
Which is very critical to success.
Yes. Yeah.
Fascinating. Ira, how can listeners learn more about you?
Probably the best way is on the website, which is www.irasmiller.com. And most of the processes and everything that we do is laid out on that site. And I'm on LinkedIn as well. I think those are probably the two best ways. And if anybody wants to pick up a phone, I know it's old fashioned, but if they want to pick up a phone and talk, it's 910-246-0983.
Yeah, the phone actually still works. People seem to be reluctant to use it, but it's a great tool.
It is, and most of the mentoring work gets done over phone, frankly, right now. So,
Good. Well, Ira, this has been a really fascinating discussion talking about leadership, the trials and tribulations. So thank you so much for taking the time to join us today on Smashing the Plateau. My guest today has been leadership expert Ira Miller, consultant, advisor, etc. Thanks again, Ira, for joining us.
It's been my pleasure, David.